Andrea Scott. We are live in the office. I'm so easily distracted by our new view, Andrea. I think that's what's going on.
Me too. I am looking at you, but yes. Then I'm looking just out at the lighthouse.
We were making eye contact.
I
thought like we had something going on here. All right. Fine then. Do you follow Police Scanner on Twitter?
I do. Yeah.
There was somebody who apparently called the police because their neighbors had 10 people on the front lawn and the music was too loud, so they called the police. And I get it, but Michael and I did one night an entire 3 hours of reasons not to call the police.
Oh yeah.
And I get it, like sometimes you can't talk to your neighbors and it gets really loud. But anyway, I just made a joke on Twitter about raise your hand if you think that calling the police because your neighbors are too loud is acceptable.
Yeah.
Because we want to throw a party next door to you. And that's the most reaction I've gotten to any, like all the jokes that I write or any of the pictures that I post, that one got the most reaction. So I'm like scrolling through Twitter, and my friend Peter Nickias, who writes for the Chicago Tribune, had retweeted an article by Scott Smith and our man in Chicago.net. And I started reading this. I'm like, here's, because I never am able to articulate the reason for protest or the sort of the way it plays out. And everybody gets really angry on both sides. Mm-hmm. And this seemed like a very level-headed approach to it. So Scott joined us in studio. How are you doing tonight, Scott?
Great. It's good to be here.
And what kind of reaction are you getting to your article? Anger from this? Because that makes me angry.
It's weird. I haven't gotten any anger.
Good.
People, for the most part. I mean, I think it was mostly this piece came out of talking with angry people already on Twitter, where most of the anger is on the internet. And I think I had a good handful of people were like, you know what? Thank you for writing this because I was trying to understand why they would close down the Dan Ryan and how does that lead to the other things that are important to their cause?
I think Andrea we were talking about this last week.
Yeah, and I probably took the other side. I kind of took the devil's advocate approach because I was
the devil
looking
has
at
plenty
it.
Of advocates.
Yeah,
so
I know.
I'll say that right now.
I was kind of going at it from the news standpoint, and I knew I would have to cover it for Channel 9. And I thought, oh gosh, you know, my first thought was safety, and then I also got a text from my mom who said, hey, I'm coming down Sunday with all their little friends. They were going to the art fair in Millennium Park. And I said, well, don't take the Ryan. She's like, well, why? And I said, well, because, you know, so she
on
had
Sunday?
To,
you were worried about Sunday or Saturday?
Saturday. Okay. Saturday. Yeah, she was coming.
I was going to say how long.
I'm sorry. My days all seem to blend.
It went so well on Saturday.
But they're going to do it again. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I was looking at it and I thought, oh my gosh, please don't shut down the Ryan from the safety standpoint and from the, oh my gosh, we have to cover this. And then, you know, state police are on the clock for overtime.
And other people are like, you know, it's an inconvenience. I'm not going to sympathize with them when they're just in my way.
Right.
And this is something you address in your piece.
Right. And it's interesting that I didn't really cover the whole safety angle. Like, isn't there a safety issue with doing this? And I think it was sort of an undercovered aspect of this. Like, this is a protest about people who, in general, feel unsafe every day of their lives. In some way, shape, or form, they have to change the block they walk down. Or they can only go outside if you're a kid at certain times. And so this ends up kind of rippling out those interests and fears of safety to people who might not otherwise experience them. And I think this was the main idea was around getting people to change the normal route they have. So if you close down the Dan Ryan, by definition, you have to end up going through neighborhoods that you would otherwise drive by or drive through anywhere between 55 to 75 miles an hour, depending on how you approach the Dan Ryan.
Right.
And so there were a lot of folks who said, you know, doesn't this create chaos for law enforcement? Why don't they march through the neighborhoods where gang members or drug dealers are and that sort of thing? And I think a lot of people approach this as, because for many people, this was the most visible aspect of violence protest that they had seen. They saw this as one thing, one time, and don't see the smaller protests of, let's say, 10 to 15 people who sit on a block from 6 p.m. until 10 p.m. because they want to be visible and they want to make sure that nobody gets hurt or that there isn't any kind of criminal activity going on. And so I wrote this in part to say this is part of a larger context of how protest works. It's designed to bring awareness. Is designed to shake up people's routines, is designed to pull people in and get people talking about an issue that maybe they haven't been talking about as much. And everywhere I went this weekend, there were people talking about this.
Yes.
And so I think like message received, and this is exactly what the process is designed to do.
And the thing is that, it, you know, when you talk about people who drive through, they don't just drive through. They also, when they see on the news that a shooting, they assume it's there, that it's not, and they're happening in their community. But Chicago is our community.
Yeah.
It's our neighbors, our kids.
Right.
And we have a, you know, there is something about being aware of what's going on, not just aware and say, oh, let them take care of it, or, you know, why don't the gangbangers just take care of it? I've said this many times. I feel as though there are people throughout the Chicagoland area who would just as soon wall off those neighborhoods and let them take care of it themselves.
Right.
And yet we choke off resources, whether it's education or economic development. And, you know, you're right. Driving through those neighborhoods, you see the difference in what the services are available, or even how developed it is compared to, let's say, Jefferson Park compared to Englewood.
The Dan Ryan itself was built in an effort by the first Mayor Daley to split black and white neighborhoods. So it was specifically built to divide people and to separate people from resources that were available. And so, in essence, this is a perfect place to do this kind of protest. But I think it's also like missing the, like, people say, why didn't they protest in front of the mayor's house? Or, you know, why did they have to make this so inconvenient? Doesn't that, you know, what is that going to do for law enforcement? And I think it was ironic that people were so concerned about that angle, because this ends up bringing law enforcement and the community together in a common cause. You saw Father Flager and you saw Superintendent Johnson walking arm in arm down the Dan Ryan Expressway. And because there is such a split often in some communities between the police and the residents that live there, something like this that brings those two factions together ends up starting a conversation and a dialogue. And I think Superintendent Johnson's been involved in a lot of those things. And that opens an opportunity I think wasn't there before.
I'm curious too. I want to know, you, and you write about this, so this is kind of probably a softball question, but I want to know your thoughts about the posturing by the mayor and the governor, you know, with Rahm Emanuel saying this was history, this was a good thing, it was peaceful. Governor Rauner saying this was not agreed upon. Father Flager said that he would agree to one lane being open. This was not the agreed upon thing. And then the mayor firing back saying, delete your account. So the posturing by those two.
Yeah, I mean, to start with the governor, I mean, I think the governor is consistently trying to split Chicago off from Illinois, whether it's in the discourse or, you know, whether it's, you know, actually a thing that he might want to actually see happen. And he often plays Chicago off of the rest of the state. And this sort of fell into that kind of line of messaging that he really enjoys. I think he has been active in trying to split resources away from Chicago. And, you know, from the point of view of a lot of people, so has the mayor, whether it is in closing public schools, closing mental health clinics. A lot of the things that cause systemic violence are things like robbing neighborhoods of resources. And so if you're closing down mental health clinics, you end up introducing people into the criminal justice system, because as Tom Dart has told us, Cook County Jail is basically the largest mental health facility in the state of Illinois. So the mayor and the governor both have had a part in this. And so, yeah, this really was just kind of the usual thing they do, where, oh, the governor doesn't give us enough resources. Oh, Chicago is looking for a bailout, etc. So that everybody was kind of playing their role there. But I don't know if there was another role for the mayor to play in basically saying, yeah, this is a good protest. He kind of doesn't want to be seen as pushing back against one of the most powerful Catholic individuals in the city, as well as his own superintendent.
It is amazing how many people really come out so strongly against Father Flager in trying to raise awareness and to constantly be out there and talking about these things. And I was surprised because of this. I also saw that people were angry at Cardinal Cupich?
Mm-hmm.
And at the Pope. I didn't realize how much anti-Catholic sentiment there is right now at the leaders of the church that are very visible and outspoken.
And I think there are people who see Father Flager as a outlier in some ways, right? That he is, in working for social justice, particularly in communities of color, that he is somehow outside of the Catholic mission, if you will. But Catholic missions have often dealt with social justice issues and ministering to the poor and ministering to people who don't have as much as others around them. And Cardinal Cupich has been very outspoken about the need to help communities that are not getting enough resources. And he and the Archdiocese of Chicago has specifically had a anti-violence program that has been ongoing, and they are devoting real resources and conversation around. So this is all really of a piece. You know, the idea of this kind of quote-unquote activist priest It's actually quite in line with a lot of Catholic doctrine. It's certainly in line with what the Cardinal has been saying over the last several months.
And Jesuit teachings. I mean, that's the thing, is to be involved, roll your sleeves up, and do something about it.
Yeah, and I think police, I think faith-based leaders, community-based leaders, I think everyone is on the same page. Let's get the gun violence down. Maybe they disagree on how to do it and how to show it. But what would the next step, what would you think the next step would be? Because I think tougher gun laws, tougher sentencing laws, stop keeping repeat offenders out on the street.
Let's give them a moment to think about that while we take a break. Yeah. Is that the whole set? The question is,
yeah, I'm going to say, what's the next step?
I better have a good answer when we come back.
To get lawmakers to look at what happened, because really the ball, I think, is in their court.
Right, and that's a lot of people ask, you know, well, what were they protesting? Just in general, and so were their goals in mind? More after this on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We're talking to Scott Smith, a writer and community organizer in the Beverly Morgan Park neighborhood and a board member with the Southwest Chicago Diversity Collaborative, and he writes about media, politics, and communities at rmaninchicago.net. Follow him on Twitter at rmaninchicago. More on 720 WGN Chicago. As usual, Chicago took the national headlines for violence, but this time it was about a protest that shut down the Dan Ryan Expressway. A lot of people all took to the social media pages to complain or to support. And one of the articles that caught my eye was by Scott Smith, ourmaninchicago.net. And I really love the way he addressed many of the concerns and questions that people had about the protest. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. I'm your host, Patty. There's Andrea. And joining us is Scott Smith, the writer of that piece. And you had a question for him about what's next.
Yeah, I think I started by saying, Scott, that I think law enforcement, community leaders, faith-based leaders, I mean, you saw it with Eddie Johnson kind of linking arms with Father Flager. I think everybody's on the same page. Let's get these gun crimes down. Let's get these criminals off the street and save the neighborhood. So what now? Because really, I think, and I think we kind of concurred, that the ball is in the court of lawmakers who need to make tougher gun laws, tougher sentencing laws, not having these offenders who are out on the street, you know, be released by the time the paperwork is done.
Yeah, I think in some ways there is a legal aspect of this, and lawmakers can get involved. But the way that I look at what the protests were about, were about two things. They were about awareness and they were about education, right? So first of all, that this is still an ongoing problem, and that people who might not have been otherwise aware of it, whether you in the suburbs or whether you were farther south of the city, you need to get involved because this does affect you. But then the other thing is, here's the issues that are at play. It's part of the reason why I wrote this thing, and part of why I'm here now is to say, like, look, this is actually about things that people that are not lawmakers, people who are not in, the mayor or the governor, can actually take a piece of. You mentioned Pete Nicias, and he's done a story on some violence in Little Village. Benny and Jorge were these two guys who were doing all these different community programs, and they involved things like softball, and they involved a prayer group. They even involved tattoo removal, so they could get gang tattoos removed. And obviously there are some things like therapy and life skills or otherwise substance abuse and violence intervention programs. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that the average person in Chicago can actually participate in. And so I provided a link to different social service places, whether it's, you know, everything from kind of Chicago Cares, which does a lot of kind of, you know, one day type of things, to ongoing places. Like, let's say your issue is around the violence being experienced by immigrants right now. You know, the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant Rights is always looking for people and for help. There's a link to a list of social service agencies that people could participate in. And that might just be, hey, you're a small community-based organization. I'd like to donate $100 to you. And that's something. It is a start.
Or your
start.
Time. Yeah.
Right. And even more important is your time and ongoing engagement and involvement. And that, I think, is really the idea of protests like this, to say we're not calling people out for being part of the problem. We are calling people in to be a part of the solution.
That's such a great way to put it, because I find that people think that they're being accused of something often when you say being called out. We're not calling you out. Right. It's an invitation.
Yep.
To be aware and to participate. I was so struck by the simplicity of your answers to all the, many of those must have come from the things you were reading online.
Things I was reading online, but also just having read about protest movements and done some community organizing. And also, look, people have the sort of questions that people offered were things that I heard on Twitter. But part of the thing was, people do get defensive. People do get, like, when you're challenged out of your usual pattern, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, the reason I didn't do it is because of this, or they should have done it this way, and then it would have been easier. And it's never easy. Protest is always uncomfortable. It's the whole idea of social protest is about making people uncomfortable. So naturally, people are going to get defensive. And so, but then it's like, okay, let's take that answer and let's explain why they didn't do it. These are people who have thought this stuff through. Flager's been doing this for decades. Here's the next thing after that. Here's why it's not in the neighborhood. Here's why it's not at the mayor's house. Because that way we're talking about things that don't involve the usual suspects. They don't involve lawmakers. This is actually an opportunity for people who are in the community who haven't been engaged in these issues to get involved and to be a part of the solution.
I am so, I love this. I want to start a segment with you and other people called "How Can We Help?"
The
best we can do. I don't know, something like along that line. Yeah. Everyone can go find not only this article, this piece that that Scott has written, but all the other work he's done. And in the article, there is a link, as he mentioned, as to how you can get involved and how you can learn more. Go to ourmanchicago.net. Our, you're ours. Not mine, just everyone's.
I try to be everybody's.
I like that. Ourmaninchicago.net. More after this on 720 WGN.